Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm David Knight. It's Wednesday, November 28th, 2012, and here are our top stories.
Tonight, was the Batman shooter a Manchurian candidate? An inmate claims he was programmed to carry out the massacre by an evil therapist. Then, the global government now seeks total control over the internet. And a New Jersey professor angrily claims that Joseph Stalin didn't kill anybody.
Yet to find one fraud that Stalin committed.
Whatever you say, pal. All that and much more up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Well, in an update to the Aurora, Colorado shooting, an inmate, Stephen R. Unruh, claims that he talked to Holmes for 4 hours and talked him out of suicide. But more interesting is what he had to say about what Holmes was telling him about the actual shooting. He says that Holmes told him he felt like he was in a video game. During the shooting, he wasn't on his meds and nobody would help him. He says Holmes also mentioned NLP, presumably neuro-linguistic programming, and claimed to have been programmed to kill by an evil therapist. When he got out of his car, he wasn't programmed no more, Unruh says. It sounds kind of crazy. He was trying to run it by me, basically. Well, it doesn't sound crazy to those of us who are familiar with MKUltra. As a matter of fact, it sounds like the CIA's MO. But the police deny that this could have happened. Captain Vince Sauter of the Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office says that even if they were booking at the same time, they couldn't shout from one cell to another like that. For someone to say that they were communicating with this person, it can't happen. And Lieutenant J.D. Knight, no relation to me, who directly supervises booking operations, said it would be virtually impossible for Mr. Unruh to have any of the communication he has stated. Well, it's interesting that they would have those comments. Because when another story surfaced a little while back, there was a female who was interred at the same medical facility with Holmes, and she made some statements about things she overheard him saying. And at the time, the same sheriff's office said that they could not make any comment about anything because they were under a gag order from a judge. But evidently, that doesn't apply in this case. Now, Unruh says that actually he was able to communicate by shouting through a small gap in cell doors that moved back and forth on rails. And what he said was, Holmes said he initially went into the theater for the sole purpose of finding his therapist, who he believed would be waiting there for him. And while he said he was programmed to commit a shooting spree, he wasn't exactly sure if he was supposed to do it on that particular night. Once he got inside the theater, however, he claims that he heard something in the movie's musical score that told him it was time to shoot certain people, though not everyone. Now, Paul Joseph Watson's article points out that the CIA's use of mind control to create killers is a matter of historical record. We all know about the Church Committee, Frank Church talking to then-director Richard Helms about heart attack guns, about MKUltra. Some of those documents have been declassified. Most of them have been destroyed. A 14-year CIA veteran, Victor Marchetti, claims that the program is ongoing and has not been abandoned. Now, you may also recall for historical purposes that this happened 1 week exactly before the United Nations arms trade treaty was to be voted on. Now, that arms trade treaty was supposed to be a mechanism to take care of the travel of arms across, the illegal travel of arms across borders, exactly like Fast and Furious. Fast and Furious, however, blew up in the government's face when an officer was killed in that. And so this was something that, in my opinion, perhaps they brought this in to try to build pressure for gun control, but it had exactly the opposite effect. It created a spike in gun sales, and the UN arms trade treaty was delayed. And they said that it would happen probably before the end of the year. And in fact, the United Nations reached an agreement meeting on November the 6th on Election Day. They reached an agreement about the UN arms trade treaty. They were ready to move in the lame duck session if they needed to. But it's now been delayed to March because they have more Democratic senators who will support such an agreement. This is something that is going to put the UN is going to establish a precedent that the UN has some say-so over our internal gun rights, because it's going to require registration as well as identification of all firearms. That's something that no one who values the Second Amendment wants to see. Well, we move from people who are programmed to kill people to people who are programmed to kill our economy. Jamie Dimon has been picked now by Warren Buffett as someone he thinks would be the best person to lead the Treasury Department. Who is Jamie Dimon? Well, he's J.P. Morgan Chase's CEO. And you might remember that as part of the TARP, they accepted $25 billion worth of TARP money, and they used the FDIC to issue $40 billion in unsecured debt. Now, to put that in perspective, Portugal is looking at a 78 billion euro bailout. Diamond's company got $65 billion, which is pretty close to that, and that was for his private company. And now they've lost $6.2 billion and was called before Congress to explain how that would happen. Of course, it was a very gentle affair with Mr. Dimon. They didn't want to press him too hard on that. Warren Buffett just dismisses that. He says, obviously, you know, there was a failure of control. He said, if you run an army, if you run a church, if you run a government or any large institution, people will go off the reservation sometimes. So, you know, the fact that he lost all that TARP, all those billions, tens of billions of dollars worth of TARP money, that's nothing that should deter us from having him as Treasury Secretary. I guess that kind of uniquely qualifies him. If he's able to lose large amounts of money with a company, he can now move to the country. When someone fails in an enterprise like this, you know, and most companies or most churches, as Warren Buffett mentioned, or something else, you don't usually move them up to higher responsibility unless they're connected with something like the Council on Foreign Relations. Let's take a look at this clip where Richard Haass of the Council on Foreign Relations is introducing Mr. Dimon.
I'm Richard Haass, and I want to welcome all of you to the Council on Foreign Relations and to today's CEO Speaker Series meeting. This is part of the Council on Foreign Relations corporate program, which is supposed to increase the connections and links between the business community and the foreign policy community, which to some extent are one and the same. I also want to thank...
Did you catch that? He said the business community and the foreign policy community are essentially one and the same. Now, I guess since big business controls our foreign policies, we also know now that DuPont and big business is controlling our food. DuPont is sending in former cops to enforce seed patents, Bloomberg TV reports. Bloomberg says that DuPont, the world's second biggest seed company, is sending dozens of former police officers across North America to prevent a practice generations of farmers once took for granted, and that is replanting their seeds. These are genetically modified seeds that Monsanto jealously guards the patents for, and they want farmers to buy those each and every year, or they're going to sue them in court. This is something that will probably go before the Supreme Court, but if you remember, in India, farmers who are planting genetically modified seeds, some of them planted them, but many who didn't had those genetically modified plants got cross-fertilized into their seeds, and they were sued by Monsanto. So many of them were being sued for so much money that there was a massive, massive amounts of farmer suicides in India. So, you know, it's starting to happen here now. Monsanto is after total control of our food supply. And the sad thing about it is that they want to, with the soybeans, I think they said that they have 82% of the global crop and 94% of the crop of soybeans in the U.S. is now Monsanto GMO soybeans. Well, from total control over our food to total control over our information, the United Nations is getting ready to have a conference that would give a UN agency known as the International Telecommunications Union the ability to control the internet. That's right. They want to hand over control of the internet to various governments, many of them authoritarian, and they will cooperate with each other on squelching free speech, as well as setting fees for people. This is not something that I think any of us want to see, especially when we realize what government has a history of doing. And we must not forget government's history and authoritarian governments that are not accountable, where there's no free speech and there's no information. But, you know, actually, even when information gets out about what governments do, sometimes history professors like to rewrite the history. And we have a video that Paul Joseph Watson picked up about a New Jersey professor who is angrily claiming that Stalin killed nobody. Let's go to that tape.
You finished asking? I'm going to answer you. What you said is bullshit. Out of all the falsifications that go on in the school systems in this world, Soviet history is falsified the most. Yet to find one crime that Stalin committed.
And I would like to quote Stalin, a great humanist. Stalin used to say, death of one person is a tragedy. Death of a million, just statistic.
Now, that last guy, he said Stalinist is a great humanist. He was actually making fun of the first professor. But the first professor is Montclair State University English professor, Dr. Grover Furr. He angrily proclaimed that one of history's most brutal dictators, Joseph Stalin, was not guilty of a single crime. Now, this is in spite of the fact that Nikita Khrushchev apologized in 1956 for the people that Stalin had killed. And, of course, a lot of those people died going to Siberia. But many were murdered. Even the Soviet Union says that agrees that 3 million people were killed. Most historians put that number at 20 million. But, you know, that's Nikita Khrushchev. Yeah, he's not exactly Mr. Touchy-feely. This is the guy who went to the United Nations, took off his shoe, and banged the podium, screaming at America, "We will bury you, we will bury you." You know, it's that Khrushchev, you know. But, yeah, he can't be believed that Stalin was a mass murderer. Well, that brings us to our quote of the day, something for you to think about when you're confronting the TSA on opt-out and film day. We gain strength and courage and confidence by each experience in which we really stop to look fear in the face. We must do that which we think we cannot. Eleanor Roosevelt. Now, maybe she didn't have the TSA in mind, but I think that's appropriate when you confront them. It's something that we all need to do. And we'll be talking to Jason Burmis later in the show in an interview, talking about how he confronted the TSA. Some of us here at InfoWars had our own experiences over the holidays. David Ortiz did, and had a good film about his confrontation with people trying to keep him from exercising his First Amendment rights. You know, something you use it, or you lose it, folks. And along those lines, I've got two words for you. Drone mob. That's right. December 8th in Austin. And if you don't know what that's about, look up the hashtag drone mob or check out Planet InfoWars. We'll be right back in just a few minutes.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com. Insider billionaire investors like George Soros and John Paulson have recently made massive moves into gold, purchasing what Bloomberg News described as gold hoards. Soros alone doubled his holdings in a single day. Russia's Vladimir Putin has doubled down on gold, increasing the country's holdings by over 100%. With $1.8 trillion under management, the bond king, Bill Gross, the world's preeminent bond fund manager at PIMCO, has warned investors of the dangers of QE3 and inflation. And what's he betting on? You guessed it, gold. Friends, this is Alex Jones for MidasResources.com. For more than 15 years, I have exclusively used Midas Resources for all my precious metal needs. Whether it's bullion or collectibles you're looking for, Midas Resources is simply the best. I own my gold as a hedge against inflation. This Federal Reserve fiat currency could go the way of the Deutschmark and the Weimar Republic anytime. In these historically dangerous times, it makes sense to physically hold gold and silver. Midas already has some of the best deals in the industry. But if you give them a call and mention the radio special, they will give you a list of the day's super specials. Midas brokers are standing by to answer all your questions at 800-686-2237. They also have a lot of informative free literature explaining the opportunities and risk of holding precious metals. They are ready to answer your questions at 800-686-2237. Again, that's 800-686-2237.
Today, the TSA claims that it is above congressional authority. Maybe that's not too surprising, since they don't seem to think that they are under the Constitution either. Why should they be under Congress? Today, a committee in Congress, the House Transportation Committee, Subcommittee on Aviation, called them to testify and said that they're going to have a hearing on how best to improve our nation's airport passenger security system through common sense solutions. Now, the TSA said on their own website that neither Pistoli nor any TSA official intends to attend the hearing, and this is what they said. By U.S. House of Representative rules, which state the Transportation Infrastructure Committee has no jurisdiction over the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, no representative from TSA will be present at the Subcommittee on Aviation hearing scheduled for November the 29th. Now, I guess we shouldn't be surprised that they don't want to be part of a discussion about common sense improvements to our nation's airports, because there's nothing common sense about the theater security that they've got going on there. I mean, they haven't caught anybody for 10 years. They didn't catch anybody on 9/11, if you believe the government's official story, and they haven't caught anybody since then, even though they have failure rates around 70%. Now, the TSA said that they were aware of our opt-out and film campaign. On their blog, they even said that they respected our First Amendment rights. But as we'll find out later when we talk to Jason Burmes, they also have some caveats there. They try to get the local airport officials to harass us and to stop our First Amendment rights. But the Supreme Court is putting the TSA in a precarious position over filming. Jake Jones from The Examiner points out that yesterday, the Supreme Court decided that it would not hear the appeal of a lower court decision making the filming of police officers who are on duty legal and protected by the First Amendment. That appeal came from Cook County, Illinois, which wanted to and tried to make filming the police a crime punishable by up to 15 years in prison. And they tried to put that multiple counts of that on one person. I think they got him up to like 75 years or something like that. But Supreme Court is not supporting that position. And actually, when you'll see the film that Jason Burmes is talking about, you'll see that when a police officer is doing the right thing, when he's standing up for our constitutional rights, he's not afraid to be on camera. You know, it's one of the things that they tell us. It's like when they film us in public, and everywhere you turn, there's a camera at you, and they read our emails, and they say, well, what are you afraid of if you're not doing anything wrong? Well, that's what we say to the police and to the TSA. If you're not doing anything wrong, why would you care if anybody films you? But you'll find that you get quite a bit of pushback. I know when I traveled this week, I got some video of myself being scanned, and that was pretty uneventful, but what took a lot of time was to try to convince the TSA authorities there that I was allowed to film my own search, that I could exercise my First Amendment rights as my Fourth Amendment rights were being violated. But what I found from them, and this is something that you may find useful to protect your own family, at first I was told that I couldn't film at all. And I just basically left my iPad running and moved it so that it was facing me, but it got put down, and as it went through the scanner, The difficulty arises in the fact that you can't touch your stuff as they pat you down. So first I had to convince them that I was able to, that I was allowed to film. I told them that it was on the TSA site, and they accepted that. But then they said, well, you can't move the camera where you can see anything. So I asked them to move it, and they complied with that. So that's something that you can use to protect yourself against TSA agents who are, might possibly go too far. It's also something you can use to protect your family. And I suggest that you do that. Now, we have a clip here of the exchange.
Your website says we can.
They weren't quite as amenable to things as the Austin TSA were, and I got quite a bit of pushback from both the person who was doing the scanning, as well as from the person who was the first line manager there. And we went back quite a bit, back and forth. I showed them the paper from the TSA website saying that they were aware of the opt-out and film campaign, that they were not going to interfere with people's First Amendment rights, but that didn't seem to stop them. They still wanted to do it. They said, I don't see anything here that allows that. So I asked to speak to the supervisor, and it took some time, but eventually they sent someone down to do the pat. They put me into a private booth, which they didn't do in Austin. It wasn't necessary to do that. I guess they were worried that something super secret might get filmed. But we did it in the booth. But the fellow who came down was very, very nice. And, you know, considering what he had to do, I didn't have any further problems with him. We've got a video here of Jason Burmess. Now, Jason Burmess, filmmaker and activist, got together with Ashley Jessica, and they shot their own video. And with more on that, here's Jason Burmess. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks for having me, David.
Tell us a little bit about your activities this busy Thanksgiving weekend at the airports.
Ashley Jessica from Toronto, Canada, she started this campaign of opt-out and film. Mm-hmm. And she decided that we were going to go down actually to the Syracuse airport at first on Thursday when I picked her up from the bus station. But to our surprise, the two main entrances where you would have had these scanners didn't have the scanners at all, and there was only about six flights for the day, so there wasn't really anything to opt out of. So we went back and we decided we were going to go on Black Friday over to the Albany airport, which I had actually just flown into. I'd gotten back, I believe, Wednesday around midnight. You know, I go through there all the time. And we started handing out flyers constitutionally up on the top by the TSA body scanners, giving people this information. Wasn't 5 or 10 minutes before this PR guy, Doug Myers, came up and started threatening us with arrest and telling us we needed to shut off our cameras and we didn't have a right to film here. And at that point, I was just like, look, here's the TSA website that admits we can be here and are going to be filming here. And he called a sheriff, and I actually encouraged that. And people who have watched the video, it speaks for itself. This sheriff, after, you know, calling in to probably his superiors and talking to the CEO of the airport, he realized we were in our constitutional bounds, and he protected our constitution so well that this Myers gentleman, who was very frustrated, actually shut off the entire top portion of the airport to non-ticketed passengers so we couldn't film there. It was pretty wild, but Stan Lenick is really to be commended and has been. In fact, I just got off the phone with the Schenectady Gazette, which is a local paper out there. The local NBC station is going to be doing a story on this. And on top of that, he threatens me saying, I need a $1 million insurance policy to be filming there. But he's displaced by the police officer. See, this is a trick so that they can deny you a permit, deny you your First Amendment, and then you were tricked into signing something that would give them grounds to sue you.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely insane.
And yeah, I saw the video. He was just, the police officer, just amazing. I mean, this other guy was just relentless. He would not give up. I encourage everybody to watch this video because it really is amazing to see somebody stand so firm from the police department for our constitutional rights. It was great. I really, you know, that was super.
Well, sheriffs are elected officials, and this guy really carried out to the letter of the law, the Constitution of the United States. And what's really upsetting is that this gentleman, the PR gentleman, is actually a former news anchor and reporter. He was actually an editor for Local 10 in Albany until like 1989. He did it for over 10 years. He was also a news anchor on local radio there back in the 60s and 70s. So this person actually has a background in media and the First Amendment, yet he doesn't seem to know the law. When the officer instructs him that I don't have to give him identification, that he can't ask me for identification after he's winked at him, thinking the officer will get it for him, he's just in shock.
Yeah, that's amazing. So he's got a long history in the media, but he doesn't care much for the First Amendment. Now, he was just, his position there was, what was his official title there at the airport?
I believe he's the PR director, but do you notice how it changed from, we can't be here and film, you can't be handing out flyers, to the CEO says it's okay to film now, but you can't hand out the flyers, yet none of it was illegal.
Yeah, it was, I also saw him, trying to tell you guys that you were obstructing traffic by handing out flyers to people too. That was he tried every trick in the book and the sheriff just shut him down at every juncture. That's amazing.
Absolutely. And one of the highlights is when he goes over and he picks up about a stack of 50 or so of our flyers and he's going to take them with him and the sheriff stops him and says, look, you can have one to look at, but you need to leave the rest there. I mean, this guy was reverting back to, this is my ball and I'm taking it home with me, like a 6-year-old, and being put in his place on every single level. And, actually Stan Lenick, the deputy, at the end of the altercation, whatever you want to call it, I talked with him. I gave him my name, my email, and my personal phone number. And he called me last night and thanked me and said, this is probably going to go as a feather in his cap. He's actually probably going to get a commendation. His superiors are happy with this, and they are just getting flooded with calls of positivity like never before. He's taken aback. So,
well, he should. We always complain when police overstep the bounds, when they don't honor the Constitution or the law. And we ought to give them commendations when they do the right thing. We ought to encourage them for doing that. Hopefully they'll do that more often. Now, when this all started, were you guys up at the TSA scanner area to start with? Do you think this guy was called by the TSA to come and harass you guys? Is that how that started, or did he just?
That's absolutely how it started. We were up at the upper level of the, I think it's in the first couple minutes of the video. Immediately we went to. We were able to hand out maybe a dozen or so flyers and talk to some of the older women that kind of greet you at the line to make sure you're not a terrorist there. You know, they've got the eye for the terrorist, even though if you believe the propaganda, David, before 9/11, they called zero terrorists. Mm-hmm. After 9/11, when they made you take your shoes off, it's called zero terrorists. When they removed the metal scanners as predominant to radiation scanners, zero terrorists. Bomb swabbing, zero terrorists. No liquid, no lighters, zero terrorists, zero terrorists, zero terrorists.
That's right. And when they run their own tests through, they fail at a high percentage. I think it's 70%, but we can't get the exact percentage. And in spite of the fact that they're not even able to intercept tests, find people that they're actually putting through smuggling stuff, and the fact that we haven't had any terrorist attacks in spite of that, I think that kind of tells us that there's not the kind of big terrorist threat out there that they're trying to scare everybody into believing there is. I mean, if they're totally inept at catching people and we haven't had any terrorist incidents, I would say there's not nearly as much of a threat as they say, if there is any threat at all. You know, for 10 years there hasn't been anything. You know, even if you accept the official story from the government of 9/11, they haven't caught anybody and there hasn't been any incidents. So it looks like, there's not really much of a threat there they're guarding us from. But everywhere you go, it says, your security is our first priority. That's their signs. I flew this weekend and that's what I saw everywhere. And it's like, no, my first priority is liberty.
It's absolutely true, David, and that's why this campaign needs to continue. It doesn't need to be opt-out in film week. Hopefully, this video, not only going viral right now, over 50,000 views in just 24 hours. People are from all over are picking up. When it hits the local media, I'm sure it'll be over 100,000 views. We want people to opt out in film and hand these flyers out every single weekend. People are always complaining that InfoWars doesn't do enough, Alex Jones doesn't do enough, Jason Furmus doesn't do enough, we're all bad, we don't give you out any solutions. Well, we're here to pull it back. Do you right. understand how they've incrementally made it more invasive, more intrusive? Now I have to worry about my genitals being groped when I go through an airport because I refuse to take a radiation or millimeter back scanner that has never been independently tested and is obviously much more harmful than the cell phone radiation they parrot. It's the same when that's a 4-inch device and you're getting encapsulated in an 8x3 device that's taking a picture of your body. It's absolutely ludicrous. So now's the time to pull it back. Everybody out there listening to this, watching this, knows they can take a couple hours out of their weekend and do the same exact thing we've done. Be polite, kill them with kindness, get the information out there, and maybe we can pull these body scanners back. Maybe we can get the TSA out of the airports.
That's right, yeah. If everybody would take action, if everybody would do just a little bit of activism and post this stuff up. But, you know, when I was flying, I took pictures of myself being scanned. And it was kind of interesting because they hadn't had anybody do that much. And, so it was really, they were really kind of uncomfortable with it, but we, managed to negotiate something, let me do that in both airports. Charlotte was a lot more difficult to get them to do the right thing. We had to go up to a couple of different levels of, supervisors. But if I was traveling through at this point now with my family, I think what I would do is go through the line first and then stand there and film them, you know, coming through to make sure that as long as we've got these, being done to people, as long as they're still doing these, pat downs that are invasive, that it doesn't get totally out of hand, as we've seen. Because that was an experience that, actually Jessica had, right? You know, she had a situation where they were really on her hard and in a bad way. And when her brother started filming, everything changed. So I think people, you know, there's two things people can do. One, they can go out as activists and they can try to stop this whole thing down because it's nothing but theater. It's not really protecting us from anything. The other thing they can do is while it is still there, they can protect their family and loved ones by getting there and filming it as they're going through, you know, and even protect yourself by, you know, setting up your own camera. Or I set up my iPad to take pictures of the pat down, and it really changed things. I mean, they were very polite once I got past the resistance to filming it.
That's absolutely correct, and the TSA has acknowledged that you do, in fact, have that right. Remember, this campaign was picked up by things like the Huffington Post, local CBS. I believe the Drudge Report actually linked to you guys about this. So it's out there, and we can take it to the next level. And the bottom line is everybody should be opting out every time, and if that were the case, they would be forced to take the body scanners out there. If half the people opted out every time, they probably be forced to take the body scanners out there. So let's educate people. And once this happens, we're going to have that ripple effect. I truly believe that this is a system that we've gone after successfully. Many people are very unhappy with it. They see the hypocrisy. They see the results are not there from the fear that they're mongering. And we can do this. We can take the TSA down and we can restore some sense of freedom in airports again.
Yeah, it's interesting. On the TSA blog, they had a page where they said, we're aware of the opt-out and film campaign. And then they said, we're not going to interfere with anybody's free speech rights. I guess they're okay with the First Amendment. It's just the Fourth Amendment that they've got a problem with. You know, but that page was a page I took with me and I showed to the people in Charlotte. And she couldn't connect the dots that meant that I was allowed to film. But the thing that they left was what I think you ran into in Albany, and they basically left themselves an escape clause by saying that they could use local officials in the airport to harass people, essentially saying, well, as the TSA, we're not going to do it. What they're going to do is call maybe somebody at the airport and do that. But that's a great example what you've got, for people to take that, to understand how that works, to take that and show it to law enforcement. You know, if they have a problem with it once, take that and show it to law enforcement and explain that video to them. I mean, they've got a perfect template now for showing that to people. On a separate incident, separate note, I don't know if you saw the news today, but a guy who was an inmate at the time that James Holmes came in, the Aurora Batman shootings in Colorado. This inmate says that he talked to James Holmes through cracks in the walls, and that he told him that he had been programmed to do this shooting. Basically said that he went to the place and made comments like he wasn't really sure if that was the night that he was supposed to be there, but when he heard certain things in the music, that set him off, and that he felt like he was in a video game, and it all stopped once he got back to his car. Now, I understand you've had some experience with you're doing some investigation into MK Ultra and mind control. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, it's a subject that I've really studied a pretty good amount for the last 5 to 10 years. I've read the MK Ultra files, where they admit that they were actually trying to have mind-controlled assassins and basically erase their memory of even carrying out these attacks. And a lot of those were destroyed. Only certain ones were declassified. And what really struck me in this article is he talked about neuro-linguistics programming, or NLP. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, most of us are susceptible on some level to NLP, whether we are consciously aware of it or not. And a lot of this is put out in subliminals and advertising. And we've now had entertainers like Darren Brown, for those that don't know who he is. He's out of the UK. I would say he's kind of the answer to America's David Blaine, but a lot more mind control stuff and neurolinguistics programming. And he's very popular there. He did a series where he essentially program somebody to think that they killed someone, and it was extremely convincing. He did this from a large pool of people. Obviously, everybody is not susceptible to this, but certain people are more susceptible to mind control, to being hypnotized, being put under these things. And when you look at the actions in the Reagan assassination, for instance, where this assassin has connections to the Bush family directly, he disappears off the face of the earth. He's taking phone calls, not at the hotel he's staying at, but from a payphone down the street. It's very, very interesting. And the fact that he's actually able to go home on weekends, you know, a lot of people don't talk about that privilege. It's the man that shot the president. So again, you have all these different anomalies, and you look at the Aurora shooting, and I think it's probably the most compelling case of mind control out there recently in some of the ones that have been labeled that. When you look at this guy, first of all, we're not even sure there wasn't a second shooter. The way they played it up in the media to try to coincide with the Batman coming out and the Joker. I mean, he wasn't dressed up as the Joker. Where did that even come from? The way the media ran with it, and the way he behaved on camera just those several times. So this man talking about the neurolinguistics programming aspect is very interesting, and it really does deserve more of a look. And people need – there was actually an episode on Discovery also. I haven't finished it yet. I don't know what their conclusions are going to be, but it was called Curiosity, and they were looking into the same thing from a large pool of people. But it's called The Experiments from Darren Brown, and I believe it's the first episode. You can see it on YouTube, and they even talk about – Sirhan Sirhan and the possibility of him being a mind control assassin. And throughout the program, I kept thinking to myself, well, they're talking about conspiracy theories and conspiracy theorists now. They're just going to debunk this. But sure enough, they did not debunk it. In fact, this assassin in a large crowded room, and they even mimicked, the polka dotted white dress, the music, shot Stephen Fry, an actor who you may have saw in V for Vendetta. Mm-hmm. So, It's very interesting stuff. It doesn't reek of something that was set up for television to me, and we've seen how human minds are manipulated on a daily basis, the way a person thinks and is stuck in this left-right paradigm and, you know, controlled by this corporate command system that they're not even aware of. So I hope people do look into this, and I hope that this guy is called up on.
Well, as you mentioned, you know, they had documents that were declassified. The church committee talked about that. You know, Richard Helms, director, along with his heart attack gun. I mean, he's talking about a lot of different things that the CIA was up to. There's a lot of documentation on it. The CIA was absolutely and totally into mind control and LSD, various other things like that, and they tended to go in and pull people that were close to them, people that were in psychological programs like this fellow in Holmes in Colorado. There's an interesting story that a great book about Frank Olson, someone who was part of the CIA inner circle with chemical and biological weapons, that sort of thing. I mean, it's really amazing to go back and look at the history of the CIA, and I encourage all of our watchers to go back and educate themselves about that, to see what our government is truly capable of. Because now a lot of these things that were being done in the 50s, they're now 60 years out. A lot of this stuff has been declassified, and there's some pretty detailed information out there. The book that I was referring to went into great detail of the timeline of everything that happened to Frank Olson, and it took decades for the government to admit that anything had happened there. And actually, the people who gave a settlement to his family were Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, who basically showed up at the widow's house and gave her the check from the government. So it's real, it's out there, and this certainly fits the pattern of all the cases that we've seen repeatedly. And they used this. We got to remember that the timing of this was 1 week before a large arms treaty at the UN was coming up, you know. So these things happen, you know. It's an interesting timing that they've got there, and it fits all the hallmarks of a MK Ultra type of programmed killing.
It absolutely does have those hallmarks, and you know, you just discussed one small caveat of what the CIA was up to with their MK Ultra and mind control programs. There's like a old 1980s 60 Minutes. It might be called Mission Mind Control. You can find it somewhere on YouTube. But you see how they plucked people out of veterans institutions, supposed mental institutions, used electroshock therapy, and much more on these people. Thorazine, you name it, to make them more submissive and essentially reprogram them. And again, this is out there. This is mainline history. It is something we have to take a look at.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Jason, for talking to us today. Thank you for your activism. Thank you for doing something. And we hope that people will watch your video and be encouraged to take their own action, as you mentioned, and you know, follow that call for action that you put out there, and you know, do their own work to try to get our freedoms back. We really hope people follow your example and be encouraged by what they've seen with a law-abiding sheriff's department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Well, if you like your news unfiltered, please go to InfoWarsShop.com and support our operation. Now, today we just had released the fourth edition of our InfoWars magazine. Maybe we can get a shot of this. We've got them all laid out here on the counter. We've got this is the fourth month. It's got Obama on the cover talking about gun control, because that's going to be coming up. That's a big topic. I think they had that set up to go through the lame duck session, but now they've got more senators. They're going to push that back into March. But anything that you do, anything that you purchase at InfoWarsShop.com helps our operation, helps to fund our operation. And this is a way that you can get the information out to people who maybe aren't that internet savvy. Well, that's all of our news. I'm David Knight.